The Business of Marketing podcast is brought to you by Demand Exchange. Demand Exchange provides the technology, content, and expertise to identify and acquire your next ideal customer. Season 2, Episode 8 features John Watton, tech marketer and fractional CMO, in conversation with Justin Cook, chairman of Demand Exchange.
Welcome to Advertising Week Europe London. I am absolutely delighted to be joined by John Watton, who is the Chief Marketing Officer and Creative Scientist. He's an advisor and investor. He's former Silverpop, Oracle, Expedia, Ariba, Microsoft, Adobe, Yext, and VMware. I'm literally sitting down with marketing royalty. Good afternoon, John.
Hi, good to be here.
Give us a bit of a kind of color around that incredible plotted kind of history.
Yes, I mean, I've been incredibly lucky to work at some of those brands, and I guess I've tried to sort of structure my career basically in working with interesting companies doing disruptive things and trying to challenge the status quo wherever they may be. Most of my career has been in B2B, and what I always say is, I guess when I came out of university, let's go way back. No one wants to be a B2B marketer, right? No one, when they grow up, say, you know what I want to be? I want to be a marketer that thinks about a complex buying unit that may take somewhere in the range of 12 to 18 months to buy something. Because I've fundamentally been in enterprise B2B software. But really, my journey into marketing and all those companies you mentioned, I've been in marketing. I started off in more technical roles, actually, and then moved in. Was really wanting to be involved in the, medium to long-term side of a business versus before that, I was more on the sales side, which, you know, is good for a lot of people, but is often a very, let's say, short-term thing to get the revenue in, which, you know, we need revenue to be companies to then to move on, but not necessarily the longer strategy. So I haven't really had a super intentional career. I definitely made the jump from sort of technical sales into marketing relatively early on in my career with the belief that it would get me into like a bigger world of company direction, the brand, products, and so on. But it was a bit of a leap of faith, and it actually proved to be the case. And then I've just tried to do things that interest me, because I think it's difficult to have a career ladder. It's more about, you know, kind of moving and doing interesting things and learning and growing. But anyway, when you read it out, it sounds like a long list to me, you know. It seems like a reasonable list, you know.
I mean, many of those companies have built the fundamental building blocks of marketing as it is today.
Yeah.
And thinking about that, what are some of the principles that you sort of work and live by in that regard?
Yeah, and what I love about... So first of all, I love marketing. I'm primarily in B2B. I've done a bit of consumer marketing. In fact, the work I'm doing now with Let's is that they have a couple of consumer brands I work on. I've also done the classic B2B to C. So often, you know, at Adobe, you're selling marketing technology to consumer brands and helping them understand how they can better connect with their customers. So, you know, that's a key part of the equation. But first of all, I always say it's never been a better time to be a marketer right now. You know, despite the, you know, the sort of hearkening back to the Mad Men years, which some people may say was the golden age, there has been no golden age of marketing. I think now is the golden age for many reasons. And what I love about marketing as a profession is a lot of things change, but some things don't change. So to answer your question, you know, there are some fundamentals that haven't changed in the 30 years or so that I've been doing it, which are about understanding your customer, telling your story in a compelling way in the customer's language, understanding what works, what doesn't work broadly, and then using the tools at your disposal to drive a better connection experience with your customers. And you know how I did that as a marketer 20 years ago is totally different to how we did it today, but it doesn't matter, right? The channels are changing, the tactics are changing. We may have more data, we may have more creativity at our fingertips. But you know, the foundations for me are basically understand the customer, using data, and combining that with creativity. Those are the three things.
I love it. I love it. The fact that you come up with three things, a classic marketeer. It's great.
Yes. Four is too much. Four is too much.
And golden age. So why is now a golden age?
Yeah. So I think when I, without sounding like I get my slippers and pipe out, when I started in marketing, there were a handful of things you could do. You could do some PR, and I'm talking about B2B technology marketing, different to consumer marketing. And the gulf was wider, right, between consumer and B2B marketing. We could do some PR, so get our name in the press. We could send people things in the post. And to do that, we used to rent lists and send things in the post. We used to run events, and people would phone up to register for an event or do a prepaid reply card. It sounds so quaint and ancient now. And if you're lucky, you could do some advertising. We're here at Advertising Week. The landscape has changed. So what I love today is that as a B2B marketer, and finally, data was hard to come by. It either took too long to get or you just didn't have it. So why I think it's a golden age now is, one, we have probably too much data. We have all the data that informs us in terms of what's working, what isn't working, what our customers love and hate, all those things, right? So and I love it because access to that is little, you know, it's low cost.
Yep.
It's some things like Google Analytics for your website, it's free, right? So that's phenomenal. You don't need to employ a consultant to spend, you know, months, you know, implementing a high-end CRM system. Now it's all at your fingertips. So that's the first thing. That's why I think it's a golden age. I think for B2B marketers, the line between the classic B2B versus B2C, I think, is blurred. The way we communicate with our customers is much the same as you would in a consumer brand. We just typically have a less spontaneous purchase, a more considered purchase, but we have to reach them through the same channels. So what I love about that is all the things that we are using in our personal life, we can bring into work and use, you know, all the social media platforms and, you know, all the sort of latest, you know, whatever, meme technology and all that sort of thing. And I think what I love now, and we're on the precipice of, and I use that word carefully, is then the ability to accelerate creativity with AI. And you know, a lot of the things that were just cumbersome and burdensome, now you can action a lot quicker. So marketers, we can move quicker, we can better understand the customer, and then, you know, we can express ourselves in really interesting ways. And for me, good marketing is about understanding the customer and sort of knowing, you know, who they are, what they want, and where they are. But great marketing, I think, is using data and creativity to stand out in the crowd, because we have to do just as much work now to stand out in a digital feed than a consumer marketer did in the 50s to make a box of soap powder jump off a supermarket shelf. So I think it's incredibly exciting. I mean, I am talking through the lens of B2B, but I think generally marketing is the sort of power that we have at our fingertips, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. And a lot of marketing now is, just because you can doesn't mean you should. But I think that's why it's incredibly exciting for both marketing and specifically for me in B2B marketing.
And how has the globalization of the market, the size of the addressable market, played into that sort of golden age?
I mean, I had an epiphany. I worked at one of the companies we missed out. I worked at a startup. Sorry, there are more, Justin. I worked at a startup back in 2008, 2009, 2010. And the epiphany for me there was, we were a 150-person company, and our ability to punch far above our weight using technology on a global level. It happened to be a marketplace for the commercial shipping industry. I will leave it there. I learned a lot about commercial shipping. And our customer base was global. And we were small marketing team. And actually, I was the first international customer for Marketo. So on their beta program, you know, now Marketo is the watchword for marketing automation. But I was the first user outside of North America. And I think what technology allows us to do is to extend our reach globally. Now, I still believe that you need to, I mean, and then you look at the bigger brands I've worked at, Adobe, VMware, we have international customers. You have to turn up consistently in the various countries. And, you know, working at VMware, I was marketing into 42 countries, you know, a $4 billion business, you know, big business, big, you know, blue chip customers. And technology allows you to get a global reach, but then I think, you know, the personalization and relevance technology then allows you to show up in the right way in the different countries. I don't think it's been quite yet homogenized globally, the kind of marketing and storytelling, but definitely, you know, more and more it's becoming common, which allows smaller brands the ability to reach globally. Now, I work in technology, so we're not selling shoes and sending things, you know, by courier, and we don't have those supply chain issues. We're typically delivering software as a service. But it is incredibly exciting now that you can just punch far above your weight, even the smallest company like the one I, you know, worked at a few years ago.
Fascinating. And then flipping that to the enormous enterprises that you've, yeah, that you've obviously worked at, how do you approach kind of sustainable revenue growth year after year? How do you kind of, what role does kind of growth marketing play in that?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, I come back to basic principles, understanding the customer. And in some ways, I sometimes push back on the term growth marketing. You know, I don't know many companies that want to shrink their, nope, their revenues. I'm in the revenue reduction team. They might feel like that sometimes when you work in big business, but we won't talk about that. Really, I think it is not just about breaking into our customer. Then to sustain that, it's about understanding their own journey. And typically, most companies have a multi-product portfolio. So then you're thinking about, from a commercial perspective, how do we expand our footprint in the customer? But to do that, you have to, you know, again, I'm talking through the lens of software as a service. Yeah. You have to show value, because in the SaaS world, as we all know, it's subscription and it's renewal. And if they don't get value out of it, they won't renew. So growth as well is about working with the customer to make sure they get value out of it, so that they come back and want to have more because they're getting their business value out of it. So I think to get sustainable growth marketing, it's not about finding more and more white space. It's about doing that, but also thinking about how you can deliver the value through marketing programs into the customers, and for their, you know, their investment in your company to be even stronger. And I think growth, there are two elements to it. There's the, let me call it the classic marketing, which is, you know, we're sort of using channels to reach out and communicate and bring them in. But of course, then there's the product-led growth, which is a big thing that is the nut to crack in software as a service. Once people are in the product, if you should be using the product as your showcase and should be your main marketing channel. So when I was at Adobe, we thought very much of that, right? The product is your marketing. The product is your advertising. You don't need to go out and put billboards or do, you know, digital programs. You can do it in the product, and, you know, hints, tips, you know, there's you know, trainings, all that sort of thing, and showing the value of it. So what's really interesting that I've seen in technology companies is marketing is becoming more, you know, marketing has gone from like a communications function to really more and more in the technology world, sort of owning the customer journey and owning the customer relationship, which is what we all always aspire to do, but was difficult when we were a little bit distanced, you know, from the customer through campaigns, and, you know, we had programs, and then to find out if they worked, we had to do some research, and that took 6 months, and then we get the data back and it didn't work, and then we go do something else. Now we're getting that sort of real-time feedback, and it becomes the product becomes the marketing, the main marketing channel.
And that relationship between product and marketing and sales,
yeah,
how do you get that right?
It definitely, first of all, is it's different in each company I've been in. And in some companies, marketing under the CMO is really a corporate marketing, communications, field marketing, events, brand experiences. And product marketing is in a business unit. So you might have many business units. Some companies, that product marketing is in the CMO organization. Sometimes those functions sit under a CRO or a COO or whoever you might have, or a CDO even, who brings those together. So I think, first of all, you've got to crack that nut. And where it works best, of course, is when people are working in the same group structure. And, you know, in the SaaS world, you typically want to segment your customers into, you know, classically large, medium, small. On the large end, in my world, that typically is a sales-led motion where you're building a one-to-one sales relationship and you're working on, you know, custom pricing, custom configuration, bringing in some, you know, even light touch services or working with a partner. So that tends to be very the one-to-one, which marketing can kind of support, but that's very much one-to-one. On the sort of medium and small, that's when you start to put it more into the product and the marketing, and product and marketing are working, you know, more together. So in some companies, I've seen the product-led growth be in marketing and then working with the product team to help, you know, understand what they need to do in the product. In others, it's been the product team. It's one of those cliched questions. It depends.
Yep.
But you need those to come together. And however you do it, you definitely need leadership to make those come together, you know, to drive that. And, you know, I've seen marketing step up on the sales side to lead the business. I've seen, you know, of course, many companies where marketing is more of a support function, you know. So, yeah, it really just depends. Yeah.
You know, and you mentioned, you know, pioneering the use of marketing automation.
Yeah.
And what are the most exciting kind of technologies and emerging channels and platforms that you're seeing now that are, you know, enhancing that golden age?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a lot of talk around it, about AI. I know in this conference, there's a lot of sessions on AI.
Yep.
Marketing doesn't have a great track record of successfully implementing a lot of technology to its maximum. You know, we've had, as we've had amazing targeting tools, amazing automation, behavioral marketing, you know, personalization, but it still hasn't been implemented to its full, you know, full benefit. So you still don't get with most brands that really, personalized, relevant experience. You still get spam from brands that, even those you love and you tolerate it, you get spam from brands you don't like, and you're trying to help them with understanding what you need and who you are. You don't get a personalized web experience. You know, you still show up in the different channels, call center and so on. So I think we've got a lot of headroom mm-hmm. in automation, in behavioral marketing, in, you know, using data to do targeting, to drive personalization. I think we always underestimate how long it takes for these things to come in. We want to move on to the next big shiny thing. So I'm incredibly excited about the stuff we have
yep.
and making that work.
Yep.
You know, to all those CMOs, don't go out and buy more. I mean, I used to work for a MarTech company, a few, Adobe, Silverpop, Yext. And I will say the technology will not solve your problems. You know, it's your strategy and then using technology in service of that. And, you know, coming from a technology provider. So there's a lot of stuff that we can still make work really well. So I'm excited by that. But of course, like everyone, you know, I'm dipping my toe in the water of AI and how that takes all the, you know, the mundanity of what we do in marketing. You know, if you're a creative and you've got to do 20 different, you know, formats of an ad, it's not just, you know, the pixel size, it's where the text goes, where the creative goes. And, you know, my old employees, I've got no vested interest in them. You know, Adobe, you know, they will redesign the ads for all the different formats instantaneously using some of their tools, and that just takes hours off. And I think the opportunity is to let marketers spend more time on understanding the customer, getting close to the customer, understanding the business, the key KPIs, you know, focusing on creative and not on all the, frankly, crap we have to do to get stuff done. So I will sprinkle some AI in there. I think the generative side of things is a great co-pilot, to forgive the phrase, for marketers. It's your little assistant sitting on the side, helps you with a few things. It's not the fully automated thing, but it definitely helps around that. But, you know, I love some of the you know, the targeting technologies, you know, some of the things, you know, you guys do on the demand exchange side. These are incredibly exciting technologies that you've invested a lot of time in over the years. And It still is, you know, is the, there's a huge opportunity for marketers to use them. So, yeah, I'm not going to say it's ta-da, you know, but yeah, definitely. I think we've got so, we're spoilt with so much technology riches.
Yeah. I think it's a great and very wise view. You sort of alluded to it a little bit in some of the kind of conversation already, but when you're building teams, what are the kind of skills and capabilities you look for?
Yeah. Justin, I've come down to three things again. And I always say this: change, curiosity, and risk, right? Right. The cliche is the only constant in our business is change. Yeah, everyone says that. But I think it's more about people driving that change and bringing change in. And you need people who, you know, typically when I'm interviewing people and you know, I'm looking at the team, if say you're bringing someone in, what have they done to change things and where they've been? It doesn't matter what it is, depending on level, but what have they done to drive a change? Because it's a very competitive, intense environment. Technology, as you know, moves at a pace. You know, if you're in a big company, there are other big companies. There are people nipping at your heels. If you're a small company, you're trying to innovate quickly. And so you need to move quickly. So how can you help change that make that change? Curiosity as well. I'm always amazed by the number of people in marketing who aren't interested in marketing. I'm interested in marketing. I'm always watching things, interested in what people are doing, see things, you know, in my personal life, on television, in ads, you know, come to industry events like this. I mean, that's why I'm here, right? To learn and find what's going on. And I want that as well, people bringing in experiences, because a lot of what we see, I don't know, you know, I work in technology. You know, it's perfectly suited to LinkedIn, you know, a little bit of X, a bit of Instagram, but who knows, maybe TikTok is the thing we should be doing. Why don't we try it? It doesn't cost much. Let's give it a go. So bringing in some of the things that people are seeing elsewhere and bringing in that mentality. And then risk, right? Years ago, risk was heavily loaded. You had to bet your budget on an ad campaign, cross your fingers, employ a great agency, see if it worked, and 6 months later you found out it did or it didn't. Now you can take a risk with, you know, 5K, 2K, 10K, do a bit of digital stuff, you know, see what the results are in a couple of days, learn from it, maybe invest, reinvest, run some A/B tests, you know, all that kind of stuff. Do some Google ads, understand which key terms, you know, win out, all that stuff. So we should always be, you know, I want people with that. Now, that's general skills. And I am a big believer that in the fast-changing world of marketing, sometimes you might need, you know, deep technical skills. But often I'm looking for people who can join the dots and who can, you know, understand the full marketing mix and may have specialism in something, running an event, social media, doesn't matter. But I need those. I'm a big fan of more an integrated, let's call it general marketer, than a team full of specialists who don't understand how the dots come together. So that's why, you know, because a lot of the skills will change. What we use 5 years ago is not what we use today. We had a Clubhouse expert a few years ago. No one uses Clubhouse. Yeah. Where is it now? We had a Second Life expert 15 years ago. I'm going back now.
No, that's
where
great.
Is that now? You know, last year it was all about the metaverse. Now it's about AI, you know? It changes every year. So you need someone who can roll with the punches and not chase the shiny thing, but can have that sort of maturity across understanding all the different channels. So change, curiosity, risk, and then, you know, probably I look for someone who can pull the pieces together in more of an integrated way.
And taking those, I love those three, that's great. So talking about sort of, you know, I'm curious, I found something and I want to change, right? And I'm aware of the risk.
Yeah.
So let's just put all those three together into practice. How do you innovate? How do you push forward?
Yeah.
How do you...
Well, it's a different one. You know, it's a difficult one. It's like, you know, when we used to go on team offsites, we do that less and less now in the post-COVID world, but it's like, we're going to go offsite and we're going to have fun, right? It's 9 a.m., let's start having fun. Similarly, you can't say it's, you know, right, everyone in a room, we're now going to innovate. But you can help it. So whatever the measure is, I've always tried to set aside a percentage of my budget for people just to try things out. You know, a culture of being data-driven. So I don't care what you do, to some extent, as long as you measure it and see the impact. And then if it doesn't work, don't do it again. Learn from it and do something else. So you've got to engender an innovation culture. So helping people understand that it's got to be data driven, giving people the latitude to spend some of their budget on that, and then typically just use mechanics like I've run innovation challenges, when I was at VMware, I had a team of 100, bringing people from all different functions in my group. You know, they haven't worked together, gave them a problem, and you know, people came up with all sorts of ideas. And then the final, you know, the winner, which was judged by some people from around the business, we did it like a little, you know, fun competition, and they got to present. You know, we gave them, I can't remember it was, you know, 50,000, 100,000, some budget to then make it happen. And the winner made it happen. It happened to be like a racing game, you know, which hit on some of our key brand things. We then activated that in conferences and exhibitions like this. We did something online. We did some other bits and pieces. But even the ones that didn't win, people had the idea of like branding a van and going on a sort of visiting customers with free coffee, and they just did it anyway. So, you know, giving people the space that failure's okay, just don't do it again. Encouraging them to use some of the budget to try things out, and running these sorts of competitions or just simple mechanics like that are just ways in which you can sort of build that kind of culture of innovation. Because, you know, all the kind of competitive, you know, books and whatever, I mean, you get like, you know, some of the sports things, it's all about that 1% difference that makes all the difference. You know, in athletics, in rugby, in football, it's just that it's small things that make the difference. And that's what you're looking at in marketing as well. Typically, if we can just improve conversion by 1%, by 2%, we don't have to spend more money. We just have to get better at that. And if we can just do that, that would hit all our numbers or blow our numbers, whatever it is. So it's typically about thinking about that versus I need to throw more money at more stuff, which is, I must say, tends to be the sort of little bit the marketer's mantra. You know, I just need more money. You know, no, you don't. We just need to improve on these things. So how can we think creatively about breaking through and doing those conversions? So, yeah, that's what I try to do with the teams I have. Yeah.
And measuring, you know, in a world where we can measure everything.
Yes.
What do we need? Yes. What do we need to measure?
Yes. And I think there's two sides of that. We can measure whatever we want. So marketing, we measure a lot of things. I think the most important thing is measuring and surfacing the things that are important to the business. Because ultimately, you know, if the business, you know, values what you're doing, understands what you're doing, that helps in all the discussions we talked about, getting budget, getting teams, expanding what you're doing and so on, getting the kind of permission to continue what you're doing. So what I tend to try and do with the teams is just, let's focus on the things that move the needle for the business, and we can measure everything else. So let's take leads, right? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of marketers start at leads, whatever that may be. I won't go into it, and I've gone through every measurement of a lead, but let's say it's leads, you know, or we ran an event and we got 500 people turn up. Okay, great. Were they the right people? Oh, I don't know. Okay, so what percentage was in our target market? And then, of course, before that then, let's make sure we invite the right people to that event. Okay. Okay, what's the process then for further qualifying them? You know, and then they turn into leads. So 500 people turned up. How many leads do you think you have? Ask one marketer, 500. They turn up to an event, they're a lead. Ask another, well, only 10% were in our, you know, enterprise segment. So it's 50. We think 50 out of that's a lead. And then there's various varieties in between. So so we need to know all that, because we need to know all the things that convert. But ultimately, what we want to know as a business is how much revenue potential came out of it, how much pipeline came out of it. So I would focus on the pipeline that came out of that activity versus the things upstream that get us the pipeline. And we have to do all the calculations upstream and downstream to sort of do all our forecasting. But ultimately, our service to the business, they're interested in what pipeline is coming in. And even more than that, how much of that then closed to a booked deal. So that's one example. So typically, you know, when I look at measurement, I think about three broad, you know, parts. The sort of top of funnel, awareness. And then I think in this day and age, you know, where companies may be, you know, increasingly reluctant to invest in like focus groups and, you know, and all that, and brand surveys. It's okay. Do people know about us? How do they express they know about us? They've searched for us on Google and they've come to our website. So let's look at that as a measure. Are we creating enough interest in all the ads we do and all the, you know, the activation we do that people want to come to our website to find out more? Let's use that as a leading indicator. So I tend to focus on that. I think kind of below that, then, you know, are we reaching our target audience? So what does our marketable universe look like? We've got to target 1,000 customers. We typically want, you know, 10 contacts for each customer, let's say. So that's 10,000 contacts should be our goal to have in our universe. How are we doing on that? And then what do we need to do to build up that? So that's kind of that. Middle of the funnel, definitely more pipeline, and bottom of the funnel, pre-customer, you know, bookings, and that's what the business cares about. And then post-customer, i.e. customer signing and becoming a customer. More and more over the last 5 years, it's okay, what's our renewal rate, you know, what's our NPS score, all those things. Marketing is more and more leaning into that, away from just doing growth and acquisition marketing to more sort of retention marketing. So those would be the sort of core measures. And we don't have enough time to talk about marketing attribution. Sourced, influenced, you know, all the stuff that, you know, we endlessly debate about. Ultimately, you know, I think one number for the business that marketing signs up for, and then we do all our measures around how many people we need to get through our funnel, how many need to come to our website, how many need to respond to our digital ads, how many need to come to our events, all that sort of thing. We'll do all that calculation, but I would distill it down to website visitors, pipeline and bookings, and renewal rate.
What a brilliant answer. I really wish we had more time. Couple more, if that's all right.
Sure.
What is in the Wooten marketing technology stack?
The marketing technology stack?
Yeah.
Well, at the moment, I think as you mentioned right at the beginning, I'm advising smaller businesses right now. So my technology stack is very, very simple. It's Google Analytics, and then it's Meta and Google Ad Centers. So, and then we've got some automation around it, very simple automation. But that, I think, for small businesses, you know, you can do a lot just with that tech stack. And I can tell you, some of the startups I'm advising, you know, that they literally have like no or little budget, so that's fine. I would say, if you say to me, you know, what is the technology stack that you would need, an automation platform, HubSpot, Marketo, all the usual ones.
Yep.
Absolutely. Some kind of data platform.
Yep.
As well. Some website personalization linked to a CMS. I know the Adobe world well, so that's AEM and Adobe Target and those sorts of products. And I think that's enough to get on with. The automation will do your outbound and inbound lead scoring qualification, automating that more and more. And of course, all of those products have some kind of AI coming into it. So all the more administrative things are now being done by some embedded AI. So that's what I would keep it simple. I would keep it simple. You know, I mean, I've worked in companies with these huge jigsaws of technology and it's just a mess. So my view as a marketer is I want to get into marketing. I'm not an IT guy and I don't want to do systems integration. So that's my view.
Thank you. I'm going to buy that now, actually. If I can just, you know, credit card details. And lastly, some advice for someone who's thinking about entering this world of marketing. What would be the one piece of advice you would give them to help them take that first step on the ladder?
Yeah, I think let's say you're in a company and you want to step into marketing. I do think, I was talking earlier to someone about, you know, do you remember when marketing used to be the voice of the customer, and now, you know, and B2B, it's kind of, we stopped talking about that and somehow we kind of, you know, deferred that to some other function, sales or product or experience team. But I think that's the big opportunity. And so understanding the customer, you know, is really fundamentals of great marketing. So I think, you know, if you're in a company and you want to move into marketing, show that you understand the customer. Because we can teach everything else, right?
you know, we can teach the tools. They're not that hard to pick up. Even an idiot like me can pick up these tools now and do something, you know, quite easy. I'm not particularly, you know, deeply technical anymore. I used to be decades ago. So I think that's what I think is, if you can, because that's what we need in marketing now, mm-hmm. someone who can understand the customer and then drive that in marketing. And depending on the size of the business, that's a big, you'll have people who know how to do all the marketing stuff. That's not what it's needed. I think that's it. And again, you know, just be curious. Want to learn, have a learn-it-all mentality, not a know-it-all mentality, and you'll do well.
John, thank you for your time today.
Welcome.
The Business of Marketing podcast is brought to you by Demand Exchange. Demand Exchange provides the technology, content, and expertise to identify and acquire your next ideal customer.